Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.
Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent, hello.
Hi, Joe.
How's your last 24 hours been?
Oh, a bit like everyone else, isn't it? Like emotional roller coaster.
Yeah.
Spent you know, too much time getting annoyed with Cork GA fans on Twitter and you know, not sleeping. But, you know, what can you do? You get on with it.
GAA have come out well today, I think.
Yeah, I think it was... I mean, I think where I would be frustrated by what we saw, and, it, like, not really, the potentially, not, you know, whatever about scenes on the street where you can't really control that. I think the crowd scenes in stadiums where social distancing hasn't been taking place. Mm. I mean, the damage that does to the case for sports to get crowds into stadiums at some stage, whatever level we're going to be at, and the impact that's going to have on people's jobs and professional sport, it's just, it's very hard to reconcile with when you see how social distancing was carried out in the sports ground on Saturday when they had 200 fans very well spaced out around the stadium, when you watch League of Ireland grounds and how much effort has gone into to make sure that they're all spread out. And then you see that it just undermines the case, and financially, and it's undermines the GA's case as well, because I'm sure they're suffering just as much as everyone else. But we know how badly the RFU are struggling at the moment, and it's having a knock-on effect on salaries and jobs and all that sort of stuff. And I think, yeah, the level five, probably the talk probably upped the anger levels as well. So it's been thankfully we get to soldier on, and we don't have to, like, if we'd gone to level five, it would have stopped the Six Nations from happening, and it would have further damaged everything. So it was a very worrying time for rugby for a few hours there.
Yeah, I suspect it was. On the crowds and stadiums and the GAA enforcing that or not enforcing that, I think what it's proven is that human nature is such that it will need to be enforced. You know, frankly, people will go to games, they will see other people that they know, neighbours, and they'll sit together. And they know they shouldn't, but they figure I'm outdoors and behavioural science kicks in. So I think that's the lesson from the last couple of weeks, is it just has to be enforced. On the possibility of level five, so we're talking here 7:40 in the evening, and we will bring in Micheál Martin's speech when he emerges from government buildings. But it would seem like the NEF advice will be ignored and it will be level three, which means, as you said, Six Nations games can go ahead, elite games, professional games can go ahead. So that means the provinces as well will be breathing a sigh of relief. If level five had come in then, Aviva Stadium, 24th of October, Ireland, Italy would be out. And if it was extended into November, Ireland have Wales in this autumn Nations League on the 13th of November at the Aviva Stadium, and they also have Georgia on November 29th at the Aviva Stadium, as well as all the provincial stuff. So that would have all been out. As it stands, that goes ahead.
Yeah, I would have. We've around the Pro 14 this weekend would have been gone. More importantly, from a financial point of view, there's around the Pro 14 on the 24th of October, but yeah, that Italy game at home, and then the France game away on the 31st of October, gone, which... And the players wouldn't have been able to train for 4 weeks. And we saw that when they took whatever time they took off for lockdown, it took them 7 weeks to do another pre-season. Mm. So if they have to stop for a four-week period of time, there's then a health and safety aspect of whether they can just go back into games again. So if it stops for any length of time, it's going to be very hard to restart it. We're already playing catch-up when it comes to games in rugby. They've decided, rather than, you know, the French obviously abandoned their season and started again, and maybe, you know, that was probably from a logistical point of view the best way of doing things, because at least they can kind of fix it as they go. But at the moment, the calendar is absolutely rammed tight, full of games.
Yeah,
and it would have destabilized the entire European scene, because that 8 o'clock game in Paris on the Saturday the 31st of October is the last game of the whole Six Nations. It's the showpiece of the Super Saturday, the finale. So if that wasn't to go ahead, it kind of undermines the whole event. And obviously that's small beans when it comes to what we're talking about in terms of the public health emergency, but it does have a direct impact on revenue, and rugby will be one of the businesses that will be under severe strain if we were to go into full lockdown again.
Yeah, rugby's under huge pressure. So let's take, as an example then, thinking out loud, the Six Nations situation. There's the reason they're so keen to get, you know, Ireland, Italy at the Aviva is not going to rock anyone's world. But the reason everybody's so keen, all concerned, to get these final two Ireland matches and the final round of Six Nations played is it suddenly unlocks about 16, 17 million of prize money divvied around.
Yeah.
And that's very nice cash if you're the IRFU at the moment and you've no fans at any games. And I presume as well, with Amazon involved, that this autumn Nations League business is bringing in a few quid as well. So with that in mind, so say the provinces have to stop. Is there any possibility that given a level five, if things were, you know, thumbs up from Boris up north, could the Irish squad decamp up to Belfast, train up there for however long and play their matches out of Belfast?
Potentially, yeah. I asked Philip Brown about this. He did a briefing about 2 or 3 weeks ago and I said, would you, you know, if crowds were allowed in Belfast or in London, would you potentially move games there to try and drum up some revenue? And he said, look, you know, it's not on the cards right now, but we'd be mad to rule anything in or out at this stage. Now, what would it look like if the entire 35, 36 rugby professionals plus the squad, or sorry, plus their coaches, broke lockdown effectively and went up to Belfast and trained? I don't know if that would look bad or whether people would just be, that makes complete sense where you go into the bio bubble. I mean, the numbers aren't particularly good in Belfast either, so you're also asking players to leave one jurisdiction for another and leave their families effectively for a 6 to 8 week period. Now, I believe they're going into a pretty harsh bubble for the tournament as it stands. I think Cartonhouse, they're going to be in Cartonhouse more than they normally would be, as far as I'm aware. I think they might be released after games, but they'll spend more time there and less time with their families than they would during a normal international window. But to ask them to go into a strict bubble in the way that the NBA have done down in Miami in Florida for as you know, as long as I know they brought their families in eventually when they got to the playoffs, but to do that would be quite difficult. I mean, rugby players are not paid that much money, and I'm sure some of them would start wondering whether it's all worth it. But maybe that's what they might have had to do if we'd gone to that level. But again, the North has generally moved in lockstep with the South when it comes to public health stuff. I mean, not quite exactly, but you know, would the local executive have gone against it? There's so many things at play, but yes, they are considering all of those eventualities, and I think their imperative is just to keep the show on the road, because another stoppage could bring the shutters down on the whole thing.
Mm. As for the weekend, the opening weekend of the Pro 14, then Leinster 35, Dragons 5. Wasn't quite the riposte you wanted from the Pro 14, who suggested Leinster have it too easy in the Pro 14, which has been the discussion point over the last while. So Leinster 35, Dragons 5 on the Friday. Ulster, with 600 in attendance, beat Benetton 35 points to 24. Scarlets 27, Munster 30, and then Connacht 28, Glasgow 24. First game at the Sports Ground in a very, very long time, since March, I think. The Munster win caught the eye in particular. So give people the story of this, and, you know, 14-man Munster, and it was Ben Healy, 21 years of age, who's very much the hero of this story.
Yeah, they were gone. I mean, They conceded an awful lot of penalties, and Scarlets, despite being the home team, kind of built a score through Lee Halfpenny and just kept them at arm's length. Didn't score a try the whole day, but kept, you know, adding 3 to 3 to 3. And Munster, to their credit, because they've come in for an awful lot of criticism in the last while, turned down points, went to the corner, kept trying to play, didn't do it all right. You know, were inaccurate at times. Peter O'Mahony got a fairly harsh yellow card in the first half, and then got a probably deserved yellow card in the second half. Which meant that he got a red card for the last 20 minutes. And they were 17 down at one stage, were certainly 14 down, and they just clawed their way back into the game. I think with 10 minutes to go, they were down by at least 10, and down to 14 men. And they just stayed with it, stayed patient, kept playing their game, and took their chances when they came. And they scored a really good try. They followed up with a maul try. Scarlett started getting indisciplined. Their game started going against them. And after nailing a pretty tough conversion, Healy, who came on pretty early for JJ Hanrahan, took full advantage of a long-range penalty deep into injury time, with a really low trajectory, but a beautiful kick that never looked like missing. And, you know, they've come into this game on the back of that disappointing Leinster performance. They've been feeling the heat for a couple of weeks. And a couple of the young guys came in the last 20 minutes and really made a difference. And their 21-year-old out half, who was part of Ireland's under-20 side last year, delivered the goods in the clutch moment. And it's suddenly a good news story again. And it's exactly what Munster needed at this point. And you would hope that a couple of the moments in the game would lead them to trust that, like, they scored a really good counter-attack try in the first half. Jack O'Donoghue popped up on D'Alande's shoulder after really good work from Mike Haley. And he just showed that when they trust their hands, they're a good team and they have good players. Like earlier on, they kicked the box kick from outside the outside the Scarlet 22, they had their first good attacking position and they put a box kick up and you're just going, oh, you know, you're being so restrictive in your game plan. But as it went on, they trusted themselves a bit more. They did a lot right. And then Finian Witcherly, Gavin Coombs and Healy come on and they all make a big difference in the game. And you just hope that Van Graan sees that, trust those young players to come in and do it again, trust the fact that his players have the talent to actually go around teams as well as going over them or going through them. And you would, you know, they have a tough enough start to the season, but it's exactly the kind of big momentum generator that they needed. And it was a pretty good start to their season.
Yeah. Bundiaki scored 2 tries in Connacht's win against Glasgow. And I think a few people made the observation that Manu Tuilagi obviously has done his Achilles now. And, you know, there might be a place for Aki in Warren Gatland's line squad. He may want that kind of physicality in there, minus Tuilagi.
He looks very sharp. I mean, it's one of the great joys in sport is watching Bundiaki playing for Connacht in the Pro 14. He really just dominates at this level. He's so competitive. He's so physical. And he looks very sharp. He just came back out of lockdown in great nick, as a lot of people commented on. He looked good in those games at the Aviva Stadium. And Connacht looked pretty good on Saturday. They have a lot going for them. They play a lovely brand of rugby, and it really suits Aki's style. He's just their talisman. He stands tall for them, and he showed a real turn of pace for that last try that they scored. He's definitely in the frame for the Lions. I think the Irish centres all will have will fancy their chances. And you know, once again, it looks, you know, we're coming into the Six Nations squad has been named on Wednesday or Thursday, and at the moment the three amigos are all fit. That it rarely happens, but you know, Henshaw, Aki, and Gary Ringrose, Tom Farrell of Connacht was really, really good at the weekend as well. A couple of Ulster guys going well in that position, but you know, it's the three of those. Like, they'll all fancy their chance to go on the Lions this summer, I guess. Next summer, if it happens. And I think Aki's first mission is to be starting for Ireland, which on current form he probably will, alongside Ringrose, I would have thought. And if he dominates in the way that he's doing at this level, then he's a cert, because he gives you so much physicality against the Springboks, who are all about physicality.
The tries for Leinster came courtesy of Ringrose and Larmer, Lowe twice and Ryan Baird. Johnny Sexton withdrawn after 23 minutes, icing on his hamstring calf, not entirely sure which, but it's not considered to be overly serious.
Yeah, they said calf after the game, but they said hamstring in their update today. So, yeah, they're playing it down big time. I mean, it's an unusual Six Nations window at the end of October, but it wouldn't be Six Nations if it wasn't a cloud hanging over Johnny Sexton's fitness. He generally pulls through. He walked off. No one really saw what happened to him. He sent this beautiful pass out for Lowe's first try. And the next, you know, I was there, I went and took a note and I looked up and Gary Ringrose was kicking this sensational touchline conversion. And you're just wondering, where's Sexton gone? And he was walking off. I think he pulled up himself and felt something, and for, you know, he knew they could beat the Dragons without him. They'd already lost Kieran Frawley to a facial injury. But, you know, I think, you know, look, obviously you have to take it seriously, and it's never good that he's carrying another knock. And, you know, you always wonder whether he's at his full potential at times. Sexton, he always seems to be playing hurt, but certainly they're sounding the fairly positive noises about it. There's worrying signs over Andrew Porter went off with, I think, a hamstring injury. There's a couple of, you know, Furlong hasn't played yet this season, and Tom O'Toole, who was third choice in the Six Nations, is out. So there's a bit of a problem with Tighthead. So if Porter has anything serious, which, again, they're playing it down, that's a bit of a concern for Andy Farrell.
Okay, slightly shorter than usual this evening. Rory O'Connor, Irish in a Pen. Thanks very much, Rory.
Thanks, Joe.
Monday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.